There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery play.
Repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. Tonight we have the usual ensemble of unusual stories. We will hear the terror-ridden tale of the Tapestry Horse. And from Dimension X, we will witness the ungodly account of Mars is Heaven. But first, from the deep annals of X-1, let us stand and observe in shock the unbelievable story, Tunnel Under the World, So Scary!
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, a story by Frederick Pohl, Tunnel Under the World.
On the morning of June 15th, Guy Burkhart woke up screaming. It was more real than any dream he'd ever had in his life. He could still hear and feel that sharp metal-ripping explosion, that searing wave of heat. He sat up.
Mary, where are you?
Guy, what's wrong? You're trembling.
Where were you?
In the kitchen cooking breakfast. What is it?
Oh, a dream, I guess. An explosion.
Did you say an explosion?
Yes.
But that's the dream I had.
What?
I dreamed there was a big explosion and then something sort of hit me on the head.
Holy smokes. Maybe there really was some sort of explosion, and it started us dreaming.
Well, there'll be an explosion down at your office if you don't hurry and get to work.
Coming in on the bus, Burkhart watched to see if there was any evidence of an explosion. There wasn't. If anything, the town looked better than ever. The only thing that seemed strange to him was the fact that none of the usual crowd was on the bus. He was a little relieved when he did see his old pal, Henry Swanson.
Excuse me.
Henry.
You pardon me, sir, please.
Henry, what's the matter with you? It's me, Guy Burkhart.
Burkhart? Sorry, I don't believe we've met.
What? Henry, for Pete's sake, it's me.
If you'll excuse me, this is my stop.
Well, I'll be... How do you like that?
Guy Burkhart got off in front of the gigantic Contro Chemical building and took the elevator to the 98th floor, where he had worked in the accounting department for 12 years. It wasn't until he was almost at his floor that he realized the speaker wasn't playing the usual commercials.
Are you happy with your present home freezer? Of course not. Well, the answer to your problem is a Feckle freezer. Feckle freezers are better freezers. Most wives would do anything for a Feckle freezer. Are you happy with your present home freezer? Of course not.
Good morning, Miss Orne.
Good morning, Mr. Burkhart.
A new hairdo, I see.
Yes. Do you like it?
It makes a lot of difference in your appearance. Is Mr. Barth in?
Why, no, sir. He had an appointment with Mr. Dorchin at the advertising agency.
Today? But today's the 15th of June. He has to sign the quarterly statement.
He said he wouldn't be in.
That's mighty peculiar.
Yes, sir.
Oh, by the way, Miss Horn, what the devil is a Feckle freezer?
A Feckle freezer?
There's a new copy on the elevator commercial. Dorchin must have landed another account. Feckle freezers.
I really don't know, Mr. Burkhart.
It's a funny day. Can't quite put my finger on it. There's something strange going on.
He couldn't shake the thought out of his mind. It persisted all through the day and through dinner. He was still brooding as he and Mary got ready for bed.
I guess I'll get a good night's sleep. Can you?
I think I'll sit up and read for a while.
All right, dear. Good night.
Good night, dear.
At exactly midnight, Guy Burkhart lapsed into a sudden deep sleep. And the following morning, he woke up screaming.
Darling, what is it? What's wrong?
Nothing. A bad dream, I guess.
You gave me such a shock.
I seem to be having a lot of nightmares lately.
Really?
Yes. The one I had yesterday. This was the same. A big explosion and then nothing.
You had a dream yesterday?
Of course I did. You had the same sort of dream.
I? Oh, Guy, you're mistaken. I don't remember dreaming.
Mary, you told me.
Guy, you're mistaken.
But, Mary...
Maybe you dreamed I had a dream. Maybe...
Yes. I might have done that, I suppose. Everything did seem sort of strange yesterday.
That's probably it. You'd better get dressed, dear. Today's the 15th, and that's when the quarterly statement...
15th?
Yes.
Well, then... It must have been a dream. Because yesterday was the 15th.
Guy Burkhart got up, dressed, ate breakfast, and took the usual bus to work. Once again, everything seemed even brighter and newer than usual. Once again, he was puzzled when he noticed none of the old crowd on the bus.
Pardon me, please.
Look, don't shout so. Oh, Henry, good morning.
Good morning.
Don't you recognize your neighbors?
I don't believe we've met.
Henry, it's me, Guy Burkhart. What's going on?
I'm sure I don't know, sir. For God's sake, don't talk to me.
What is it? Are you being followed or something?
Don't you know? I was sure you remembered.
Remembered what?
I can't talk. This is my stuff, sir. Will you please excuse me?
Henry! Henry, for Pete's sake!
As in yesterday's dream, Guy Burkhart got off at his stop and took the elevator to the 98th floor. The speaker in the elevator purred a new commercial this time.
Marlin cigarettes. They're sanitized. Does your present cigarette make your throat feel raspy and unpleasant? Marlin cigarettes contain a miraculous new drug which actually gives you the sensation of smooth, creamy smoke. Marlin cigarettes. Marlin cigarettes. Marlin cigarettes.
He walked down the marble corridor to his office.
Good morning, Mr. Baker.
Good morning, Miss Horn.
You like my new hairdo?
Why, yes. Is Mr. Barth in?
No, sir. He had an appointment
with Mr. Dorchin at the agency. I know.
You know?
I guessed it anyway.
And today is the 15th of June, and he won't be here to sign the quarterly statement. And I'm going nuts. Let me have a cigarette, will you?
Yes, sir. Try one of these. They're Marlins.
I never heard of Marlins before today. What are we? A bunch of guinea pigs for Dorchin's new advertising accounts?
Is something wrong, Mr. Booker?
Wrong? Perish the thought, Miss Horn. Perish the thought. Hello?
This is Swanson. Henry Swanson.
What is it?
Do you remember?
Remember what?
Just remember.
Listen, Henry, let's stop playing games. Yesterday, either I was dreaming or you snubbed me on the bus. Today, the same thing happens.
You do remember, thank heavens. I thought so when I saw you, but I couldn't be sure.
What is it you want?
Listen, tomorrow morning, when I get off the bus, you get off with me. But be casual. They may be watching.
Who may be watching? Swanson. Hello?
You got it, Mr. Booker?
Yes, I'm still out of cigarettes. Would you buy me a pack of Kelvins?
Wouldn't you rather have Marlins?
I smoke Kelvins.
But, Mr. Burkhart, Marlins have that soft, creamy smoke that's so soothing to your throat.
You really believe that stuff?
It's true. I wouldn't say this, Mr. Burkhart, except that, well, I've gotten to know you pretty well, and I've grown to admire you so much.
I see.
Would you mind, Mr. Burkhart, if I told you that for months now I've wanted to, well, just comfort you? I know how troubled you've been.
You've never mentioned your feelings, Miss Horn.
April. My first name is April.
That's a pretty name.
You see, I do have your welfare at heart. That's why when I see you smoking Kelvins, and I know Marlins are so much better, won't you let me buy some of them for you?
I suppose so. Why not? Here, bring me a carton.
Thank you, Mr. Burkhart. Guy. I'll be back.
There was something wrong. Something definitely peculiar about what was happening. A call from Henry Swanson. The strange behavior of his secretary, Miss Horn. These new products, the dream. Guy Burkhart went home that night feeling like a man in a nightmare.
That you, dear?
It's me.
Have a good day.
Fair.
Oh, before you sit down, would you go down the cellar and put in a new fuse? The switch in the hall closet blew out. I shut it off.
Okay.
Sophie will be ready in a minute, so don't start fooling around with that old boathouse you've been building.
I won't. Mary! Mary!
What is it?
Come down here. Hurry up!
What is it?
I'm not sure. I was looking for a fuse, and I thought maybe I'd drop one in the boat hull, so I scratched around. Look. Let me put the flashlight on it.
Well?
Look at the floor.
Well, what about the floor?
It's supposed to be cement.
Well?
It's copper. There's a thin layer of cement, but underneath it's metal. Look here. Underneath the concrete. More metal. There. And here, on the wall. Metal. Metal under the floor, behind the walls, every place.
Well, I don't really understand.
Mary, I know this sounds crazy, but somebody, for reasons I can't begin to guess, has taken this house and replaced it with a clever imitation.
God.
I know it sounds insane, but take a look. That bracing on the beams. That isn't the bracing that was always there.
Oh, you're imagining.
I am not imagining. Mary, I'm going to look around for a little more.
Well, your dinner will be ready.
Save it for me. There are a couple of things I have to figure out.
The following morning, Guy Burkhart woke up, screaming. He dragged himself into the kitchen where his wife Mary was preparing breakfast and discovered it was still June 15th.
Mary, listen.
Guy, what is it? You're trembling.
Mary, the dream.
Dream?
About the explosion. The same one we've been having.
We? I didn't dream about any explosion.
You did. Why are you covering up?
Covering up? Guy, what's happened to you?
It happened. It happened.
What?
Where's the morning paper? Where is it?
Outside the door, I guess.
June 15th.
Well, you'd better hurry. Today's the day Mr. Boss fills out the quarterly tax return.
No, it isn't.
What?
He won't be there. He'll be at a meeting with the head of the advertising agency.
Mr. Dorchin?
He'll be there. And this Horn will have a new hairdo. The elevator will be selling some new product. And Swanson...
What about Swanson?
Swanson. He's... I wonder if it's going to be the same today or whether...
Guy, what in the world are you talking about?
Nothing. Where's my coat?
You haven't had breakfast.
I don't want to miss my bus. I'll see you tonight.
Guy Burkhart got on his bus. There were the same unfamiliar faces, the same unusually new-looking buildings, the same unusually bright sunshine, and Henry Swanson, pale and furtive.
Oh, excuse me, sir.
You're quite all right.
Do you remember the phone call?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Get off at the next corner and follow me.
Where are you going?
There's an excavation for a building about a block down. But make sure you aren't followed. I'll go first.
Burkhart. Burkhart, here behind the fence.
Now, Henry, what's this all about?
Get the man. I want to make sure you aren't followed.
Followed by whom?
By them, of course.
And just who are they?
I'm not sure. At first, I thought perhaps they were Russians. Now I'm beginning to think they're Martians. No humans could have accomplished what they've accomplished.
Look, start from the beginning, Henry. What's going on?
Burkhart, peculiar things have been happening to you, right?
Yes.
A lot of your friends are missing. Your house seems changed.
Well, there's something stranger than that. The date. Today is June 15th. Yet I could swear that yesterday was June 15th and the day before that.
Yes, you've got it. It's always June 15th. And you and I are the only ones who know it.
Why? How?
I'm not sure. I think it's some sort of mass hypnosis or something.
Why didn't it work for us? My wife Mary doesn't remember things.
Somehow when it happened, they missed us. We were protected from the full force of the rays or whatever they use. Burkhart, where were you on the night of the 14th, about midnight?
That was Sunday night.
Yes.
I was down in the cellar, under that boat I'm building.
And I was in my dark room developing some pictures.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. Russians, Martians. What makes you think so?
I've seen them.
Where?
At the end of the tunnel.
What tunnel?
The one that they built under Tylertown.
A tunnel under Tylertown?
Yes, that's right. It's made out of copper or some alloy.
Wait a minute. I found a copper layer under my cellar floor last night.
Yes, so did I. That's how I discovered it. I found a way to get in, too. It's at the bottom of this excavation.
Holy mackerel. Well, why don't we tell the police?
Because we can't trust them. Even the police may be Martians in disguise.
You're being melodramatic.
Am I? You just come with me.
Where?
Into the tunnel. I'll show you.
Henry Swanson led Guy Burkhart to a small hole in the side of the excavation. There he removed a cut-out piece of metallic substance, and they crawled into a dimly lighted tunnel. They walked for what seemed like 2 miles, until Swanson held his finger to his lips.
We've got to be quiet now.
Henry, this is fantastic. We've got a tunnel right under the whole town.
Oh, Burkhart, you haven't seen anything yet. There's a room a little further down. We'll be able to look through a glass in the door.
Is it safe?
It's perfectly safe. Unless one of them comes along. Now, come on. Here. Look through this glass. Now, just so I know I'm not completely insane, tell me what you see.
Good Lord.
Well?
A tremendous panel with dozens of telescreens.
And in front of each, a servo robot. They seem to be computing something.
Yes. I watched them. They're evaluating data from the screens.
Evaluating?
Why not? Each of them has a part of a human mind, remember that?
It's against the law to transfer an evaluating circuit from a human brain to a robot.
Ricard, whoever is conducting this monstrous experiment is operating far outside the law.
Have you gotten a chance to look at the data on those screens?
No. No, I've been afraid to go in. There might be a warning circuit somewhere.
If we knew what those robots were working on, we'd go to the authorities.
I'll risk it if you will.
It's worth a chance. We're lost anyway.
Okay. Open the door.
So far, so good. Come on. Let's take a look at that data.
Yes, but don't interfere with the robots.
Don't worry. Let's look at the screen. Listen to this. Tests in the 47K12 group with Marlin cigarettes pulled 80% using the soft feminine approach. Indications are that an extension of this approach would sell at least 70% nationwide. On the Feckle freezers, the direct elevator pitch pulled only 10%. This should be abandoned and a new series of high persuasion elements introduced. Henry, do you know what this means?
I haven't the faintest idea.
I don't blame you. It's crazy, but it fits the facts when I think about it. Do you know who's behind this?
Martians.
Not Martians, Henry. Advertising men.
What?
I don't know who they are or how they've done it, but somehow they've taken Tylertown over. They've got you and me and 30,000 others right under their thumbs.
Hypnosis.
Hypnosis drugs. Maybe some kind of ray or something. However they do it, what happens is that they let us live through a single day. During that day, they pour all kinds of suggestions and propaganda into us. At the end of the day, they evaluate the results, see how we've reacted. Then at midnight, they wash the day out of our minds. And the next morning, we start the same day over again with different stimuli.
No, I can't believe it.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but think of it. They can run the perfect test, and on a whole community. Do you know what that means? Suppose one man learned how to influence people 100%. In a year, he could sell us anything from freezers to political candidates.
Oh, now, wait a minute. We're not
guinea pigs, Henry. This whole community is one big test tube for propaganda research.
What do we do?
Somehow, we get out of this town and get to the FBI.
Do you think we can?
Yeah, it's worth a try. Come on.
Wait.
What is it?
Look. There's somebody coming down the tunnel.
We've got to hide.
Quick, behind the circuit box.
Shh. Good Lord. It's Dodgson, the head of the agency that does our advertising.
Quiet.
All right, Burkhardt, come out. We know you're in this room. Miss Horn has informed us that you remember. I must warn you, it's useless to buck us. Come out peacefully and let our maintenance crew adjust you properly so you don't remember from one experiment to the next. It'll be quite painless. If you don't come out peacefully, we'll have to get you.
Henry, take this wrench. When I give the word, jump him.
He may be armed.
We've nothing to lose.
Very well. I'm coming after you.
Burkhardt, I've killed him.
Wait, get his coat unbuttoned. Maybe his heart is still beating. Henry.
What is it? What's wrong?
Look, underneath his coat.
Oh, heaven help us.
It's a robot. A humanoid robot. Designed to look like Dodgson.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Wait.
What's that?
A loudspeaker.
I told you it was useless, gentlemen.
Who are you?
Mr. Dorchin, naturally. The real Mr. Dorchin.
What are you trying to do to us?
Merely trying to prevent you from damaging my experiments, gentlemen.
You can't get away with this, Dorchin. Sooner or later, somebody, the FBI or somebody, is going to get wind of this madness.
Oh, now, really, Burkhardt, you're quite naive. Now, why don't you be reasonable and let the maintenance crew adjust you?
If I refuse, I suppose you'll kill me.
That would be quite impossible.
Oh?
You see, Burkhardt, you're already dead.
Dead?
You're shocked. It's quite true. You and everyone else in this town were killed by premature atomic blast at the Control Chemical Plant. The blast occurred at 7 a.m. on June 15th. That's the last thing imprinted on your minds. That's why you wake up screaming each morning.
It isn't true.
Oh, but it is. What I and my associates did was take the brain circuits from your dead bodies. We stored them in electrochemical batteries until we had a chance to rebuild the cities and begin our tests.
Do you think I believe a fantastic tale like that?
I imagine you'll find it incredible. Of course, we didn't rebuild everything exactly. After all, it only has to last for a single day. June 15th. At midnight, we turn off the power and wash out the memory of the day. You and your friend Swanson, unfortunately, have defective circuits. You'll remember.
Burkhardt, it's no use. We're trapped. Please give up.
Not me.
But what can we do?
We can make a run for it down the tunnel. Come on.
It's useless, Burkhardt.
Keep going.
It's useless. Useless.
Burkhardt, it's no use. You go ahead. I'm finished, Milk. We're almost at the end of the tunnel.
I can see a door. Here, I'll help you.
No, I can.
Just a little further.
No.
Now, here. Oh. This door is open. It opens. Oh, no. I don't believe it.
I can't run anymore.
Come on.
Oh, I'm sorry. You go ahead. I'm finished, Milk. We're almost the end of the tunnel.
I can see a door. I'll help you.
I can. Just a little further.
The way into a chasm so deep that they could not see the bottom.
The star is up.
Beyond was only a glare so bright that their eyes could not stand to look into it. And yet, just beyond the limit of their vision, something towered. Something so huge it was almost inconceivable. Something...
Burkhardt!
Yes?
This is Dorchin. Now, do you understand why it's useless?
The great looming figure moved closer. It seemed to take shape now, and yet it was so gigantic as to be unbelievable. It came closer. The glare was partially blocked, and then Guy Burkhardt knew that the towering shape was none other than Dorchin himself.
You see how I did it, Burkhardt? I took your brain circuits and had them reduced so they could be transferred to tiny humanoid mannequins. That's what you are, Burkhardt. A tiny miniature of yourself. And this city, this whole experiment I'm conducting, is built on a tabletop.
It was the morning of June 15th, and Guy Burkhardt woke up screaming.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine.
Oh, kids! Was it that scary? Was it that scary? Maybe it wasn't so scary, huh? Okay, so I'll straighten it out next time, really. I've heard of commercial disasters, but really, huh? Yes, afraid so.
When it all turned out they were so tiny, I had to say, hey, wait a minute, huh?
Yes.
I mean, I might have been trusting, but No one's that Gulliver. You can tell the writer had a history of mental illness. Obviously, he'd been seeing too much of his shrink. Oh, down, boy. Down. No. I guess I should be a little more careful. Maybe the character just wasn't so smart. Perhaps he was a graduate of the minuscule, huh? Yes. Thank you. Really, though, I shouldn't kick a man when he's down. Especially when he's that far down, huh? Besides, I imagine by now his temper is running a little short. Thank you. So on to the weird circle and the tapestry horse. So scary!
Weird circle. In this cave by the restless sea, we are met to call from out of the past stories, strange and weird. Bellkeeper, toll the bell so that all may know we are gathered again in the weird circle.
Again, the immortal tale, The Tapestry Horse.
It would seem often that the feuds between the houses of the great are shrouded in mystery and antiquity. However, in at least one instance, that of the neighboring houses of Stenhoff and Luren in Hungary, the beginning of the feud itself was pictured in a great tapestry hanging in one of the upper rooms of the Luren Castle. It was hung so that the observer, having looked upon the disgrace of the Stenhoff ancestor, could turn and look from that very room at the glory of the present Stenhoff Castle. Once the families had been close friends and had made their homes as close to each other as possible, but greed and jealousy had at least two centuries ago caused a murderous hatred between them. I observed the inconceivable finale of this great feud between these two houses at first hand because of my position as personal servant and confidant to young Master Frederick Luren. In fact, strange things began to happen the very day of the death of Frederick's father. We were standing in the tapestry room.
Gertner.
Yes, Master Frederick. I'm right here, sir.
Oh. Do you hear it, Gertner? Do you hear that bell?
Yes, sir. It's
They're tolling it for his death. They don't know, do they, Gertner, that he lives on forever?
Lives on forever, sir.
Listen to me, Gertner, listen. My father died last night, but I knew it even before they started tolling the bell. I knew it when the last breath left his body. I knew it because he and I are now the same person. His life goes on in my body just as his father's life went on in his. It's been so ever since the first of the Lurens. Our spirit is undying.
It has always been a great house, sir.
Greater than the house of Stenhoff, eh, Gertner? Yes, greater than the Stenhoffs.
Much greater, Master Frederick.
Master Frederick no longer, Gertner. Baron Frederick now.
Yes, sir. Baron Frederick.
Yes, Gertner. Our house is greater, but for one.
The daughter of Baron Stenhoff.
Elsa. Ah, Gertner, I love her. No one, nothing will ever stop my marrying her. Tonight, when I meet her in the garden, I'll tell her that at last I can marry her. For now, I'm the master of Luren Castle.
Very true, Herr Baron. Very true, sir.
You see, Gertner, even the bell knows now that there is still a master of this castle. A powerful master.
Everyone knows, Baron Frederick, that the present Baron is the greatest of all the Lurens.
This tapestry, Gutner, the fight in that scene, it happened almost 200 years ago, and yet it seems that it's still going on.
The Lurens won that fight, sir.
Yes, and the Stenovs swore vengeance from then on, even to the last of us, Gutner. Even down to me.
And such a hatred, sir, will last until one family is destroyed.
Baron Stenov hates me personally, though, Gertner. And he hates me with a deadly hate. Still, today is the day we must meet, he and I. For today, as happens only once a year, the Baron Luren and the Baron Stenov meet to discuss affairs of state. Stand by me, Gertner, while he's here. Take stock of what he says.
It wasn't long before the Baron Stenov was announced. I noticed during the interview that he looked very often at the tapestry and his eyes followed back each time to the face of Frederick Luren. As I followed his glance, I could see why. The face of the Luren in the tapestry was exactly the face of my master. The likeness and the look of proud superiority were the same. From the moment the Baron Stenov entered the room, there was an air of animosity between them.
Good day, Baron Frederick.
Since it is necessary, Baron, come in. A chair here is prepared for you.
I see, so that I may gaze directly at that accursed tapestry.
It's not a favorite of yours, sir, I know that. But it is a favorite of mine, and this, remember, is my house.
You are no more polite young man than your father before you.
While my father's body still lies in this house, even such a man as you, Baron Stenov, must feel a duty of some respect.
Never, Baron Frederick, shall I feel respect for a Loren. Dead or alive.
Beware, sir. Someday you may be taken as suddenly as he was.
Ridiculous. Why, I'm as strong and healthy as a horse.
As that horse there in the tapestry, perhaps?
That is a tremendous beast, sir.
And like you, Baron, it was a Stenov.
I doubt that you could ever master a Stenov horse.
I dare say, sir, I could ride any horse alive.
Someday, no doubt, there will be one that will master you, Frederick.
Let us hope not, Baron. That would indeed be unfortunate for my proposed marriage to your daughter.
My daughter?
In fact, I have already asked Elsa, and she has agreed, pending your consent.
Because she knew you would never have it. Our families were born only to hate and to destroy each other.
That is still true, Baron, but for one, Elsa.
The blood must have weakened in the Loren line, Frederick. You would try to get the mastery of my estates now by marriage. Rather than murder, I warn you, Frederick. The hatred reflected in that horse's eyes, there in the tapestry, against that murdering Loren, is not dead yet.
200 years ago, a Loren murdered a Stenov, and the hatred lasts in the eyes of a tapestry horse.
And in the heart of a Stenov. Have you noticed, Frederick? The face of the Loren in that tapestry. It is your face, exactly.
While you were talking, Baron, I've been looking at the eyes of that horse. Tonight I see that they're really like human eyes, like your eyes, in fact. Strangely like yours.
Perhaps I, too, shall come back after death.
As a horse? Oh, Baron, remember the prophecy about our families. A lofty name shall have a fearful fall, when as the driver over his horse, the mortality of Loren shall triumph over the immortality of Stenov. Perhaps if I were to prove that I could ride a Stenov horse...
Perhaps. Try it. Try it someday, Frederick.
I have never heard a stranger conversation, nor have I seen such looks of hatred upon two men's countenances. This being a tale of hatred can have no definite meanings, for hatred itself in its very essence is insidious. Yet I knew there was a very definite threat in the Baron Stenov's last words. And nevertheless, that evening, Frederick went as usual to the garden of the neighboring Stenov castle to meet his lovely Elsa.
Elsa?
Frederick, my darling.
Oh, Elsa, my darling. I was afraid you wouldn't be able to come.
Is tonight different from any other night? I couldn't miss seeing you like this, even if it were only for a minute. Nothing could stop me.
I was afraid that your father would be watching you. I spoke to him today.
You spoke to him about us?
Yes. He was furious. He threatened my life.
Your life?
Oh, Elsa. Elsa, come with me now. Come tonight. We'll be married tomorrow and live safely together. Safe from your father, from all the evil things that he thinks and plans.
I want to, Frederick. I want to so much.
But you shall not, Elsa. You certainly shall not.
Father!
Well, you see now, don't you, Baron, that Elsa wishes to marry me as much as I wish to marry her.
I told you before that that was impossible.
You're an old man, Baron. Someday you'll be powerless to stop us. Then...
Even then, Baron Frederick, even then you will not be safe. Watch then, Baron Frederick, after I've died, for your chance to ride a Stenoff horse.
What does he mean, Frederick? Father, what is this?
It's a part of the threat he made this afternoon.
A threat that shall be carried out, Frederick. Wait and see. And now, Elsa, come with me back to the castle.
Baron Stenoff had made his threat again. I didn't realize how much it really affected my master until later that same night. He was sitting in the room in which hung the fatal tapestry. Outside, everything was in confusion. But there, high up in the castle, not a sound could be heard. I knocked on the door.
Come in.
Baron Frederick. Baron Frederick, sir.
Well, Gertner, what's all the excitement?
The stables. The stables of Stenoff. Baron, look out there. Out the window, sir. They're on fire.
What? Well, is that so exciting, Gertner?
But they're about to collapse, sir. The animals, all the horses, they can't save them all.
It's a just vengeance on Stenoff. He loved his horses best of all, Gertner. If he loses them, it's only the first sign that he's going to lose all he has.
You see, they're running wild, sir. All the horses, look, they're escaping.
It's strange, Gertner, that I should have been here, looking at a horse while this was going on.
The tapestry horse?
Yes. I came into this room because I wanted to look at it again. It's a magnificent animal. Now you see out the window there, Gertner. None of the horses that the present Stenoff has is as big or as strong as this one.
Baron Frederick! Baron Frederick! Look there!
What?
The roofs of the stables have just collapsed. And I saw the Baron run into them just this minute.
Then that's the end of him.
Oh, I know, but... Look at the tapestry now, sir. Look at it!
What? What about it?
That horse... In the tapestry there. It moved.
No. The light of the fire is playing strange tricks with the figures.
But no, sir. Look. Look there now. His head has turned. He's looking at you, sir. Looking at you now. Right at you.
His eyes. His eyes, Gertner. They're like human eyes. They seem to glow with hate. Gertner, look. He's moving again.
And your shadow, Baron. Your shadow. It's fallen exactly over the figure of the man on the ground.
Gertner, look out the window there, quickly.
Oh, yes, sir. It is. It is. Running from the ruins of the stable. It's a horse. Exactly like this one in the tapestry. Baron. Baron Frederick. It's coming into your own courtyard.
Quickly, Gertner, quickly. We must get out of here. Down there and catch that beast quickly, Gertner.
Baron Frederick. Look.
What? Tapestry horse. It's gone from the tapestry. There's nothing there now but an empty space. Quickly, Gertner, quickly. Lock that door and lock it securely.
The firelit courtyard, the look of astonishment on the young Baron Frederick's face betrayed to me that he had noticed the same thing I had. The horse now before us was exactly the same beast we'd been watching with such fascination in the tapestry. It had the same enormous fawn-colored body, the same magnificent head, the same eyes.
Good. The eyes. Look at that animal's eyes.
Why, they're almost like human eyes, sir.
The way they look at me. They stare at me as though the beast actually hated the sight of me. They're like the eyes of...
Like the eyes of Baron Stenhoff.
Gurdner.
Look at him, sir.
When he heard that name, Gurdner, when he heard that name, he reared up.
Could it be possible?
He believed that his soul would live again in another form. Gurdner. Look. That animal is standing still. Right here beside me. It's as though he wanted me to mount his back.
Frederick! Frederick!
Here, Elsa. Here.
Frederick. Father.
I know, my darling. I know. I saw it all from the window, but I was powerless to do anything.
Hold still now. Be quiet.
Frederick, what happened?
He was running toward the barn, Elsa. He ran so wildly. It was as though he were being chased by something. He seemed frightened.
The horses. He loved his horses. He was afraid for them.
He ran right into the barn, Elsa. Right into the flaming barn. Nothing escaped the wreck, Elsa. Nothing. Except this one horse.
I've never seen it before, Frederick. It's not one of ours.
But it must have been. It ran from the wreckage of that stable. From that very stable where...
Where Father was killed. Say it, Frederick. Go ahead and say it.
Yes, Elsa, from that very barn.
Look, Frederick. Look. He's standing still beside you, as though he wants you to mount him.
Yes. Perhaps I will. Perhaps I will.
That horse, sir.
And why not?
Remember, sir, the tapestry.
Well, so much the better, Gurdner, so much the better. If it really is what we think it is, think what it will mean.
But remember, sir, remember the prophecy as the rider over his horse.
And now, Gurdner, now is the chance to prove that prophecy. Here, hold.
No, Frederick, no. I have a premonition. Don't try to ride him. Don't, please, Frederick.
Oh, now, Elsa, my darling. Look, I'll mount him right around the courtyard here and be right back.
No, Frederick, please.
Oh, why not wait, sir? Wait until the horse has been rested before you try to mount him. The excitement tonight, all that has happened, he may be better in the morning.
Well, perhaps you're right, Gurdner. Perhaps. Very well, Stenhoff horse. We'll rest you until tomorrow. And then Aluren, for the first time, will ride a Stenhoff horse.
Frederick, the way you say that, almost as though you hated the horse himself for being a Stenhoff.
A Stenhoff. He's a Stenhoff, all right.
Why, it's almost as though he understood every word you say, sir.
Yes, Gurdner, I believe he does.
What are you two talking about? What do you mean?
Elsa, these things are not for you to worry about. Tomorrow we will ride. For tonight, the fire is almost burned out now. You'd better go back to your room and get some sleep, Elsa. In the morning. Then we'll see how the prophecy turns out.
Good night, then, Frederick. Good night.
Good night, Elsa.
Shall I take the horse to our stable, sir?
Yes, Gurdner, and quickly.
Very well, sir.
Be careful, Frederick. Please be careful. There's something about that horse.
Oh, last night, Elsa, when it was dark and there was only the light of the burning stables to see him by, I'll admit he did look terrifying. But today...
Today he will look just as terrible.
Well, here comes Gurdner with him now. We shall see.
He looks like a beast from the Middle Ages.
Yes, they had horses like that then, didn't they?
Tremendous, fierce beasts they were. I've heard Father talk about them sometimes. He seemed fascinated by them.
Your... Father.
You know he was fascinated by horses. He studied them as though they were a science. Oh, look out!
He'll be all right, Elsa. Gurdner has a firm hold on him.
Here he is, sir.
Good. And we're ready, hmm? Watch, then. Watch as Aluren rides a Stenhoff horse. Or is it a jackass? Hold! Hold still there!
Are you still going to ride him, sir?
More so now than ever, Gurdner. Here, give me a hand up.
Very well, sir.
There, hold still. There. Now the Stenhoff horse will find the rider. Away we go.
Oh, no!
Bring him back, sir.
Frederick! Frederick, stop! He's carrying you off into the woods.
Pull him in, sir. Pull him in, sir.
Frederick! Gertner. Gertner, what can we do? Go get another horse. Go after them.
It's no use, madame. It's no use. That horse is as swift as the wind. He's carried the Baron much too far to catch them.
There must be something we can do. We can't let them go just like that.
There may be one thing.
What is it?
Well, I'm not certain, but there must be something, some answer in that room.
What room? Gertner, tell me what you're thinking
of.
In
the room with the tapestry. Come, madame, with me, quickly. There may be an answer there.
Take me there. I don't understand, but perhaps you can show me.
I'll take you to the room with the tapestry. The tapestry that your father hated so much. The one...
The one with the horse in it. Gertner.
That's it.
That horse.
The very one.
That horse. He was like the one Frederick is riding now.
That is why we will go there. Oh, here we are, madame. Here's the room.
Why is it locked?
Baron Frederick ordered it so after last night.
Last night? Did something happen up here last night?
The horse seemed to come alive last night as we watched it in the light of the burning stable.
It's so dark in here. I'm frightened. Curtain of the windows are open and yet it's dark.
It's as though the room were filled with smoke.
Is there a lamp? Something to make more light. Curtain, did you hear that?
Yes, madame, I heard it. We must work quickly. Anything may happen now.
It was like the whinny of a horse. A curtain or a lamp, some kind of a light.
Yes, madame, just a moment. Here. Here's a lamp. You wait until I light it. There's still oil in it.
Hurry, curtain, hurry. This darkness, it's awful, like a blanket over the room.
Yes, there you are, madame, there.
At last. Now I can see a little, but it's still dark. Give me the lamp, Gertner. Let me look at the tapestry.
Over here, madame.
Gertner! It's gone! The horse is gone!
He left the tapestry last night, right before we found that horse in the courtyard.
Oh, Gertner!
The lamp, madame. Look out, the lamp! The lamp! Why, it's fallen over.
It's burning! The whole room's afire! Oh. Look! Look there! The flames seem to have leapt all over the walls. Run, Gertner! Run for our lives!
This way, madame. This way. The door is over here.
Did you hear that, Gertner? Did you hear that noise? It was as though the horse was right there in the room with us.
Yes, sir, perhaps it was, madame. Yes, indeed, I heard it.
Look. Look ahead. Yes. The fire seems to have run ahead of us. It's almost at the stairs. The whole castle seems to be on fire all at once.
Down this way. The stairs are still holding. But do be careful.
It's all right so far. Come on. We're almost at the door.
The whole castle is on fire.
Out this way, quickly.
Yes, madame.
There. We're safe now. We've got away. But the whole castle, it's in flames.
Yes, madame. Listen.
It's
a horse coming this way.
Oh, listen, Gertner. Listen. Do you hear? It's Frederick.
And look, madame, they're coming right toward us.
But Frederick, he's not afraid anymore. He's laughing.
And the horse seems so tame. Well, look there. It's doing exactly what Baron Frederick commands.
Frederick! Frederick, my darling! Are you safe?
Safe? A lure and safe on a stead of horse? Of course! Whoa!
Why, it's amazing. Look there, how the horse obeys him.
And the way he stands. So still.
Almost like a statue. And his eyes, so calm and almost friendly. Oh, here, let me help you down, sir.
All right, Gertner. There. Hey. Ah, hold her. Hold. Oh, come back here.
Look, he's dashing right into the flames. The horse, he's going right into the burning castle.
Gertner, we've got to stop him. He'll be killed.
We were sure that everything that had been inside that inferno was completely destroyed. Next day, we returned to look over the charred ruins. In some places, there were still little curls of smoke coming from the heaps of refuse.
Surely, Frederick, surely everything is gone.
We will build it again, Elsa. It'll be a greater castle than ever.
We will build it together, Frederick. Build everything together now.
Baron
Frederick, come. Come quickly, Baron Frederick. There's something over here.
What? What is it, Gertner?
Something you must see, sir.
Gertner, you look so startled. It must be something terrible.
Oh, no, madame, it isn't anything so awful. It's... Look there, sir.
Right under that pile of rubble that's still smoking.
Why, it's a piece of cloth.
Yes. It's a tapestry.
It is. Yes, it is.
Here, good. Here, help me. Help me to pull it out.
Yes, sir. There you are, sir.
There.
Unfold it quickly.
Look there. Look at it. Not even one scorch.
In all this blaze, it didn't burn at all.
And look there, sir. Over there in the corner.
Yes, Goodner. I see. The horse. It's back there in its place in the tapestry.
And its expression. It's as though his whole spirit had been broken. As though... Frederick. It is the same horse. The horse you rode yesterday.
Yes, Elsa. The horse I rode yesterday. At last, the mortality of Aluren has triumphed over the immortality of Astenneth. You see, Elsa, you see, Aluren has finally broken the spirit of Astenneth. And it was I, Frederick, I who finally did it.
Frederick. Frederick, come with me now. Come home with me. Can't we let these things be? These horrible things. Can't our families be the same?
Yes, my darling. Yes, Elsa, I'll come with you. I'll come. For at last, at long last, the hatred of our families is ended. Now there's only one family. And its name shall be Lúrin.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have heard another immortal tale in The Weird Circle. Bellkeeper, toll the bell. Be here in this lonely cave by the restless sea once again next time for another immortal tale in The Weird Circle.
The Weird Circle is distributed exclusively by Nostalgia Broadcasting Corporation, Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Oh, kids, it was scary. No, that one really was scary, huh? Huh? The tapestry horse. Now, according to one survey, that was the best animal show ever. Who was it? Oh, yes, the Gallup Paul, huh? Oh, really? Now me, I never trusted those surveys, unless I heard them straight from the horse's mouth, huh? Oh, yes. I trust the trainers, too, I have to admit. You can spot them a mile away from the queer clothes they wear, like velvet. National velvet, huh? Of course, Liz Taylor was the most famous example, really. She was only the stableman's daughter, but all the horsemen knew her. Yes, yes. When she heard that joke, she said she couldn't believe what I done. Really? Of course. No, I tried to explain to her I was just horsing around. But when she heard that she fell apart, how do you jockeys say? Oh, yes, she became unglued. Oh, it really must be rough being a horse. No, I mean, if you lose, you wind up in the coffee factory to make Pony Espresso. Really, I never drink the stuff, though. I have a hard time with it. It gives me the trots. Oh, sorry. And speaking of running, that's exactly what you want to do after you hear the next story. Mars is heaven. Very scary.
Wheaties presents Dimension X.
Adventures in time and space. Transcribed in future tense.
Dimension X. On stage tonight, Dimension X, another in the Wheaties big parade of exciting half-hour presentations.
Say, tomorrow's Saturday, you know, and maybe you don't have to show up for work. A whole swell summer day for just what you want to do. So, start off with a big holiday bowl of Wheaties at breakfast and just see how it sparks up the morning. Wheaties are whole wheat, you know, and I don't have to tell you what good, sturdy nourishment that is. So, if you got fish to catch or golf to play or maybe a hike to take, just see how Wheaties can make it all a lot more fun. You know why? Why, lady, mister, it's just because you feel good when you've had your Wheaties. Those two-fisted little whole wheat flakes are loaded with vitamins and minerals. And so are you when you've had your Wheaties. Go on, try them. Just you see how Wheaties at 7 can help at 11.
When the first space rocket lands on Mars, what will we find? Will we be welcomed with open arms, or will the Martians treat us as invaders? Only one thing is certain. Someday a giant metal ship will take off from Earth to travel through the black velocities, the silent gulfs of space, to descend at last into the darkness of the upper Martian atmospheres. And on that day, man will finally know the answers. The day we first land on Mars.
Now hear this. Approaching critical deceleration. Fasten gravity suits. Stand by the land.
Mr. Lustig, what do you make of the terrain?
There seems to be a heavy ground, Miss Captain. We won't be able to use our infrared lights.
Then we'll have to come in on radar.
Isn't that a little risky, sir, landing in the dark?
I'd rather run the danger of a blind landing, Lieutenant, than come in without the cover of darkness. Remember, we don't know what kind of reception is waiting for us down there.
Airspeed 500. Altitude now 4,000.
Bridge to engine room. Stand by for deceleration.
Engine room, aye.
Fire forward tubes 1 and 3.
Aye.
Skids down.
Skid, check.
Altitude 500. 4. 350. 3.
Half a point now. All right. Let's set her down. Look out! Cut the power. Master's pipe battle stations.
Aye, sir.
All secured, sir.
Well,
we're on Mars. April 20th, 1987. 4:33, Greenwich time. Enter that in the log, Master.
Aye, sir.
Well, gentlemen, it's less than 2 hours till dawn. As soon as it's light, we'll send out a landing party. Masters, get me an all-over hookup.
All set, Captain.
Now hear this. All right, men. The smoking lamp is lit. We're 17 men on an alien world. And it's up to us whether we ever get home again. Next few hours should tell the story. And I want instant obedience to all commands. I'll court-martial the first man who doesn't jump to when he's ordered. And one other thing. We may be on Mars, but this is still a United States naval vessel. Officers will conduct a personal and weapons inspection in 1 hour. That's all.
Inspection, Captain, now?
Mr. Lustig, we've got an hour and a half to sweat out before we find out what's outside that airlock. I'd rather have a man worried about his stripes, about what's waiting outside on Mars.
Landing party report to forward airlock. Captain Black, Lieutenant Hingston, Lieutenant Lustig, and Dr. Horst report immediately to forward airlock. It is now landing time, minus 5.
That's what you're facing us, Hingston. You ready, Dr. Horst?
Yes.
Ready as I'll ever be.
Come on. Report to the airlock.
Go. Hey, where's the captain?
Who knows? What difference does it make?
Just want to get it over with, that's all. Has anybody
Get a cigarette?
I think you're smoking too much, Lieutenant Lustig.
Are you nervous?
Lay off with your horse.
Wondering what's hidden outside underneath that ground mist? Very unusual planet, Mars.
Why?
It has an atmosphere. Wonderful thing, an atmosphere. Where you find one, you find life.
You mean Martians?
What do you think they'll look like?
Who knows? Intelligent life can take many forms.
You mean they may have green skins and eyes on stalks or something?
The comic book conception is possible. Or they may have developed to a point that is far beyond us. Perhaps they have a science that can produce weapons far more dangerous than our atomic missiles.
You think we may have to fight our way out?
After all, we are invaders.
Now hear this. Landing time minus two. Landing time.
All right. We heard this. I know what I'd like to find outside that airlock. Good old Illinois. You ever been there, Lustig?
Only Chicago.
Boy, you ought to see my hometown. Green lawns, big white houses.
Sounds like my hometown.
My grandmother used to have one of those iron deers on the lawn. Every Halloween, we'd paint it another color. One time, we painted it black and white like a Holstein cow.
Where does your family live, Horst?
I have no family. When I was a child, they were gassed to death in the Dachau concentration camp.
That's tough.
Oh, it has its advantages. I have no ties on Earth. Nothing to lose now. I imagine I'm the only one on board who is free to enjoy our present peculiar position.
All right, Lustig. You can button it up now.
Aye, sir.
Now, gentlemen, in 1 minute we'll be the first men to set foot on Mars. Quite an honor, eh?
As long as the medals are not awarded posthumously.
Still uneasy, Dr. Horst?
Captain Black, I've been uneasy ever since I can remember. On Earth and on Mars.
Now, 30 seconds. Give me the intercom phone, Lustig. Masters?
Aye, sir.
Battle stations to be manned till we return. If we're not back in 2 hours, I want no rescue party sent out. Blast off and save the ship, you understand?
Aye, sir.
All right, gentlemen. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Lustig, open the outer airlock.
Fresh air.
Let's go. Hold it now. It's too dark to move fast.
Quiet, isn't it? Not even a wind.
You can't see anything through this ground mist.
Quiet. We don't know what's out here. Come on.
What the...
Quiet, Captain. I could swear that sounded like a rooster.
You don't hear it anymore.
A very unlikely sound. A rooster crowing on Mars?
Kingston.
Aye, sir.
Set that machine gun 25 yards to the flank. We'll stay here till the ground mist lifts.
Aye, aye, sir.
What do you make of the ground, Horst?
Grass. Plain grass. You can see some large foliage there where the mists stand on.
What the heck is that, Kingston? Hold your fire, you fool! I hit it, Captain.
What?
Some kind of wild animal. I hit it. I could see the tracers, but it's still standing.
Come on, Horst.
Doctor, where are you?
Up ahead. Admiring the wild animal.
Careful, Horst. Wait for us.
Don't worry, Captain.
It's an iron deer. A lawn ornament.
That's impossible.
It's hollow. Interesting, isn't it? A whitewashed Victorian iron deer sitting on a lawn in the middle of Mars.
I don't understand.
Look around. The mist's lifting.
Captain, look there. A house, a regular old-fashioned house.
On Mars.
Good Lord. I haven't seen carved scrolls and gingerbread like that in years. Look at that port swing.
The geraniums.
There. I told you it was a rooster, Captain.
Give me the glasses, Lustig. I want to take a look through that front window. What? There's an upright piano. Some sheet music on it.
Lustig, it's beautiful Ohio.
Beautiful Ohio? That can't be.
Look here, Horace, do you think that civilizations of two planets could be identical?
I don't know. That specific variety of geraniums is only 50 years old on Earth.
Is it logical they should develop in Mars? How about that porch swing, that piano, and beautiful Ohio? No, it's impossible.
Captain Black, this looks like the town I was born in.
Well, it looks like my hometown, too.
I've thought of something, sir. It's the only solution. Maybe we're not the first ship to reach Mars from Earth. That's the only answer.
That's impossibilistic. There's been space travel that couldn't be secret. Do you have any idea what ships cost, what industrial power is needed? There's got to be some logical reason.
Captain, I think perhaps we might find out. The light just went on in that house.
Kingston, cover that door with a machine gun.
Aye, aye, sir.
Come on, Horse. We ring that doorbell. There's got to be a scientific answer to all of this.
There's something moving in there.
Stand back, Horst. Give me a clear shot. Maybe a Martian.
Can I help you?
We were looking...
Well, if you're selling anything, it's much too early.
No. Wait a minute. What town is this?
What do you mean? Are you census takers?
No, we're strangers here. We want to know how this town got here.
Is this a game?
No, it's not a game. We're from Earth.
From where?
From Earth.
Do you mean out of the ground? Hey, are you sure you're feeling well?
Madam, we came in a flying ship across space. We're from the third planet. This is Mars. Now, do you understand? Mars.
You go away now, you hear? I'll call my husband from upstairs and he'll chase you now.
But
go on.
This is Mars, isn't it?
This is Green Lake, Wisconsin, in the United States of America. Bounded on the east by the Atlantic and on the west by the Pacific. Now, go away. Goodbye.
Horace, do you suppose it's really possible? I've got to find out more about this.
For the last time now, go away.
Pardon me, madam. What year is this?
Year? Well, 1928, of course. Oh, for goodness sake.
You hear that, Horst? And we know it's 1987. And we know it's Mars. Is it possible that we got fouled up, made some tremendous blunder, and circled around and landed back on Earth?
In 1928?
Maybe some switch in time or dimension. Could we have shifted somehow and gone backward in time? Horst, it won't hold water. It's not logical. We've checked every mile. We went past the moon and out into space. We're on Mars.
Find out anything, Captain?
No, we're going back to the ship till I figure out some logical explanation for all this. Lustig, out at point.
Aye, sir.
Kingston in the rear. Keep that gun at half load.
Aye, sir.
Of course, there's got to be some cold, logical solution.
Captain.
What?
That house down the street. The white one with the green shutters.
Lustig, what's the matter?
I never thought. Thank God.
Lustig, come back here.
He's running for that house.
That crazy fool, after him quick.
Lustig, stop.
Come down off of that porch.
Grandma!
Lustig, what the devil are you in your truck?
Grandma and Grandpa, it is you.
Lustig, what's going on here?
Albert, why, it's been so many years.
How you've grown, boy.
Oh, it's so good to see you.
Lieutenant Lustig.
Oh, Captain. Grandma, I want you to meet my friends. This is Captain Black. Captain, I want you to meet my grandfolks.
Howdy. Any friends of Albert's is friends of ours.
How long you been here, Grandma?
Oh, good many years. Ever since we died.
Ever since you what?
Oh, yes, sir. They've been dead 30 years.
What? You mean to tell me that Mars is heaven?
Oh, nonsense, no. All we know is here we're alive again. And who are we to question God's infinite ways?
Lustig, we're going back to the ship.
But, Captain, I want to talk to my grandfather.
Lieutenant Lustig, I don't like any part of this. You come back with us, I have to club you and carry you.
Yeah, but, sir, then I...
Heaven only knows what they've run up against back of the ship.
Dimension X will continue in just a moment.
Well, now let's come back to Earth for a moment. And what's more appropriate than Wheaties and baseball? You'll see what I mean as I introduce Ed Prentice, who has a special treat for you. Carry on, Mr. Prentice.
Folks, I'd like to have you meet a good friend of mine and a prominent member of a fine little organization known as the Chicago White Sox, Mr. Lucius Benjamin Affleck.
Ooh, Ed, don't say it like that. Whoever heard of a ball player named Lucius? What if I went around calling you Paul Edward Prentice? Let's just make it Ed and Luke, huh?
All right, Luke. Say, just how long have you been with the White Sox?
Over 20 years, Ed. Golly, I played in darn near 2,500 games. Then it bat almost 9,000 times. Man, I'm from way back.
Well, Luke, you don't look it. How do you keep up the pace, anyway?
Well, Ed, I sleep good. I eat good. I eat mighty good. Wheat is about four mornings a week. Those little old flakes put a lot of snap, even in an old-timer like me. Must be because they're 100% whole wheat. I sure like Wheaties and milk and fruit.
You know, Luke, that's exactly what I hear from a lot of ball players and plenty of other people, too. No wonder they call Wheaties the breakfast of champions.
Well, thanks, Luke Appling and Ed Prentice. You know, folks, you may not be a champion ball player, but Wheaties can help you feel like one. So try them. Wheaties, that is. See how Wheaties at 7 can help at 11.
Look at that crowd around the ship. Looks like we're being welcomed with a celebration. Celebration, they've abandoned ship. Every port is open, no guards set. You, masters.
Hiya, Captain. Meet my old dad. Dad, that's Captain Black, and he's not a bad guy for an officer.
Of all the... Kingston. What's it? Bring that man back. Use force if you have to.
Excuse me, sir. There's my Uncle George.
Kingston.
I'll be right back, Captain. Uncle George. Uncle George.
What the devil
is going on? Understand, sir. They've all found friends and relatives. They're all here.
He's right, Captain. I've counted. The whole crew is out on the crop.
But I gave orders. Definite orders.
You don't understand, Captain.
I understand mutiny. I don't care how many relatives show up. I'll have discipline.
Johnny! Johnny, you old son of a gun.
Edward. Edward. It's you. It can't be.
Of course it is. Johnny, you old son of a gun.
Ed. Edward. Dr. Horst. This is my brother, Edward.
How do you do?
Hello.
It's wonderful to see you, Edward. Look, I've got to get back to my ship.
Hey, I almost forgot. Mom's waiting at home.
Mom?
And Dad, too.
Mom? Dad are alive? Excuse me, Horst. Then you're real, Ed.
Don't I feel real? How's that, huh?
Ed.
We've got lunch for you, Johnny. Mom's making corn fritters.
Corn fritters? Dr. Horst, haven't you found anybody?
No, Captain. I have nobody.
Then you come on home with me, right, Ed?
Sure, you bet.
Horst, you wouldn't believe it, but it's been 35 years since I had Mom's corn fritters. By George, 35 years.
And there's plenty more in the kitchen, so don't hold back, Johnny. You too, Dr. Horst.
Well, Johnny, you're still in the Navy, huh?
That's right, Dad. I'm in command of the ship.
We're an old Navy family, Dr. Horst. All three of our boys in the service.
Ed was the best pilot in the Pacific. What did happen, Ed?
Oh, what's the difference? I'm here now.
Oh, you know, it's almost perfect. All we're missing is your brother, Will. Then the whole family could be together.
Well, it won't be long, Mom. Will's in charge of the XR-54. That's the next rocket coming out to Mars.
Well, little Will. When does he leave, Johnny?
Takeoff scheduled for September, but it depends on what we report. There's no question about that now, eh? Christmas together again. That'll be something, huh?
Yes, sirree. Well, this calls for a celebration. How about a little of the old dandelion wine, eh, Johnny?
Now, Father, don't you go giving Johnny too much wine.
Oh, he's a big boy now, Mother. Well, sir, isn't everything just fine? Just fine.
What do you think of my little family,
Very nice.
You know, I can't understand why you didn't find any folks here, Dr. Horst. It's just a shame. Everybody else is so happy.
I never remembered my family, Mrs. Black. All I know is they were gassed at Dachau during the Second World War. When I was liberated, I was in a delirium 3 months. I cannot remember anything before then. The psychiatric phenomenon.
That's terrible. Isn't there anything anybody can do?
I don't want to remember.
Oh.
I haven't had a pleasant life. I prefer to be free of emotional entanglements. They interfere with a scientific approach.
I'm sorry, Dr. Horst.
Oh, I'll get it. Hey, that's our ring, long and three shorts. Hello? I remember that.
Well, maybe we'd better call it a night. You must be getting tired, Johnny.
I better be going back to the ship.
Oh, nonsense. You stay the night. We insist.
Oh, I just couldn't rest thinking of you all alone on that ship.
Oh, I'll be all right. All right. Well, good night.
Oh, wait a minute, Dr. Horst. That phone message was for you.
Me?
Yes, that's right. A message from Anna.
Anna? I don't remember any Anna.
She asked if you were better.
Well, perhaps she's someone you knew at Dachau.
Anna?
She said she's coming over here first thing in the morning. So you'll have to stay over.
Yes,
well,
but
that settles it then. You stay here, Horst. You can bunk with me in my old room.
Oh, but Johnny, we thought you'd like to be with Edward.
So you could talk the way you used to.
Well, we can't put Dr. Horst on the daybed. I think we better share the room tonight. There'll be plenty of time for talking, Ed.
I guess so.
Well, I suppose I better drop back to the ship. You know Ed's security check.
Well, why do you have to do that here?
Well, I don't know. There's no good reason, I guess. Well, I suppose we skip it tonight.
Oh, sure.
Good night, everybody.
Oh, it's good to have you home, Johnny.
It's good to be home, Mom. No. I just been thinking about what we were expecting. Green-skinned Martians with eyes on stalks. All the time there was only Mom and Dad and Edward waiting. It's funny what tricks your imagination can play on you. Yeah, I guess Mars is heaven, Horst.
I've been thinking about Martians, too.
Yeah.
Captain, just suppose there were Martians, and they saw us land. Suppose they thought of us as invaders. What would be the best weapon they could use against our atom bombs?
I don't see what you're getting at.
They would want to disarm us first. To wipe out all suspicion. To make us feel at home. But suppose this house isn't real. Suppose the people are just images. Stolen from our own memories by Martians. Created for us by telepathy, hypnotism.
That's the craziest theory I ever heard.
Maybe that's why there was no one for me. Because in all my life, there is no happy memory. No real loved person.
How about that phone call from Anna?
Yes. Anna. I didn't remember who she was, but I do now. I just remembered. When I was freed from Dachau, sick, delirious, I raved about a wonderful, kind nurse named Anna that took care of me.
There you are. It's logical. She's coming to see you tomorrow.
But there was no Anna. I'd been nursed by a man.
What?
Anna was only a dream. And there's only one way they could have learned about her. By reading my subconscious mind.
But that's impossible, Horst.
Why? The whole crew was thinking of home. Suppose the Martians read our minds.
Yes, but if... But there are Martians.
If there are, they have us separated. Each man in a different house. Sleeping. Trusting. No one at the guns.
I left my pistol downstairs. Do you think there's something to this, Horst?
It's a perfect trap, Captain. Who would suspect his own mother? His grandparents? How easy. Just a knife in the heart of each sleeping man.
That's impossible, Horst, but... We've got to get back to the ship.
Listen. The crickets have stopped.
Come on.
We don't know when they change back to them. Whatever they really are.
Careful.
Where are you going, John?
Ed, well, we wanted a drink of water.
That's all, Edward.
You're not thirsty, John. You don't want a drink. You don't want
to
drink.
His face, it's changing. And his hands, he's a Martian.
Run, horse.
Run. Get away, John. You can't get away.
It's my horse.
Can't get away.
Horse, go. Where are you? Hello. Hello, can you hear me, Earth? This is Captain John Black. The XR-53 calling from Mars. I've locked myself in the ship, but they've crippled it. I can't take off or fire the guns, and they're coming for me now, the Martians. I'm all alone here. All the rest are dead. Hinkston, Lustig, Dr. Horst. Poor Horst, he didn't even reach the door. Listen, they're trying to break through the hull now. Edward and Mom and Dad and all the folks. But they're changing now. Melting and changing back into... They're Martians. Can you understand me? Martians, not men. They made us think that Mars was heaven and we fell into the trap. Can you hear me, Earth? You've got to stop the next rocket. Tell my brother Will. Tell my brother Will not to come. They'll trap him too. They'll kill them all. Hello. Hello. Can you hear me, Earth? This is John Black on Mars. Hello, Earth. This is John Black on Mars.
Tonight, Dimension X has presented and transcribed the Ray Bradbury story, Mars is Heaven, adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured players were Wendell Holmes as Captain Black and Peter Capell as Dr. Horst. Your narrator, Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman. Engineer, Bill Chambers. Dimension X is produced by Van Woodward and directed by Edward King. Robert Warren speaking. In a moment, we'll tell you about next week's show. And now, here is your Wheaties man, Frank Martin.
Folks, tonight we have a special guest for you. Here he is, Joel McRae.
Hello, Frank Martin. I kind of expected to see a package of Wheaties sticking out of your pocket.
What? Did I forget them?
You must like Wheaties, Frank.
Sure, don't you?
You bet. I'm joining the big parade of Wheaties programs, you know, with Tales of the Texas Rangers come Saturday night.
That promises to be real entertainment, Joel. I understand these are true stories of the Texas Rangers.
Absolutely. Each story is straight from the Texas Ranger files.
Well, we're mighty proud to have you join us, Joel, with this new program. We'll all be listening on the same NBC station Saturday night for Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Okay, Mr. McRae?
Okay, partner. Good night.
Good night, Joel. And friends, be sure to listen Saturday, that's tomorrow night, to Joel McRae and his new program, Tales of the Texas Rangers. And get your Wheaties, everybody. And this is the Wheaties man, Frank Martin, inviting you again to listen tomorrow night to Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers on the Wheaties Big Parade. See you then.
Next week, the story of the strangest case ever recorded in the files of the Bureau of Missing Persons. The case of the Man in the Moon. You'll hear the whole story next week when we venture once more into the unknown world of...
Dimension X.
Boy, no, not that it really was scary. That was the scariest one of them all, huh, kids? Ha-ha, and I guess it proves one thing. There is no heaven on earth. Good thing, too. Or I think I'd be very cross, huh? Yes, yes. No, I've tried hard, really I have, to change. But so far, the only cross I can appreciate is the red type, huh?
Yes. No, really.
Now, that was where I had my first brush with the law. I robbed one of their blood banks, huh? Yes, it was all a misunderstanding, though. I was trying to take out a loan. I tried to explain to the nurse, really I did. When it comes to blood, no one pays more interest than me.
Yes.
I may be in the black, but I'd much rather be in the red.
Yes.
But alas, our time has expired. So until next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This is the Count reminding you that when the Red Cross comes to your area,
give till it squirts, huh?
Returns control of your radio device to you until next week.